Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. Today, we're speaking about the Billy Meier case. Edward Albert Meier is a 80-year-old man. He had a recent birthday not long ago, I believe, or very clearly on the edge of being 80. He's 79 if his birthday didn't occur. Now that I think about it, I thought his birthday was in February. But in any case, Billy lives in northern Switzerland in a little tiny mountain village called Hinterschmidt-Ruti, which is not that far away from where he grew up. He grew up in Bulach, Switzerland. Around 1945, he was about 5 years old. He started to have these telepathic messages from a man named Svoth. Svoth was an extraterrestrial human from a race of beings that originally allowed themselves to be called the Pleiadians. But they're not from our Pleiades. They're from a star system called the Pleiaren star system, about 80 light years beyond the Pleiades, yet in a different dimension, a different space-time configuration than our reality is. Our universe, the creation, is very complicated, evidently, with different dimensions, different space-time configurations. So there could be multiple different space-time configurations. We don't know. That's something they've chosen not to tell us about. There are certain things that these extraterrestrial humans decided we weren't ready for, and it's probably for our own good. But they gave Billy a lot of information, and probably the most important knowledge that we can get is about this universal consciousness that we unfortunately in our religions refer to as God. And the Meier material calls it the universal consciousness or creation because they emphasize that the responsibility for life depends on the individual and that we need to learn independent thinking and responsibility rather than depending on some outside power or influence. And our religions tend to undermine our responsibility, even though we don't look at it that way. So there is a universal intelligence, a universal consciousness, but not a Heavenly Father that takes our responsibility away. We human beings that live many, many lifetimes, we have in our middle brain, in an area called the superior colliculus, a little spark, a little small fragment of this universal consciousness. It's the part of us that lives on between lives. And every material lifetime that we live is designed to increase the knowledge and the power of our spiritual consciousness. So we have a material consciousness and a spiritual consciousness. Our material consciousness is our current personality along with our mind, the unconscious mind, the subconscious mind, the conscious mind. So when death comes, the physical body dies, And the consciousness leaves the body along with this spiritual consciousness. Your spirit form leaves the body. And it takes your material consciousness with it. And they go over into the spiritual realm. And there's an area for each spirit form in the spiritual realm called the overall consciousness block. And your current material consciousness goes there in this overall consciousness block. And what is processed is all your previous life's memories. And they're kind of condensed into their essence, into the to what you learn in terms of logic and reasonableness and humility and balance and love and wisdom, and all these things are distilled into their very pure essences. And that's what's absorbed by the spirit form for the next life. Now, all of the memories of your previous life are kind of put into the subconscious of the new consciousness. You're given a new consciousness and a new personality each time that you go back into a material life. Now, all this that I've just described occurs in the spiritual realm, in this other dimension that exists, this energy band around the planet, so to speak. And in an ideal situation, if you lived 100 years in the material life, you would live about 150 in the spiritual realm, while all your previous life experiences were distilled down into their essences, and then your spirit form would be absorbing all this information. Then a new spiritual, a new consciousness is created, and a new personality. And then this new consciousness, the new personality and the spirit form then go into the body of a fetus that's born again, and you begin a new life. The new consciousness is living for the first time, but the spiritual consciousness, the material consciousness, is living for the first time. The spiritual consciousness is kind of in the background. As this child grows up again, it will get impulses or signals from its spiritual consciousness. And that's what kind of helps it mature. I'll give you an example. The great musician Mozart, at 4 or 5 years old, was brilliant, could do incredible things. Well, the spiritual consciousness of Mozart, according to the Meyer information, that's all I can say, according to the Meyer information, is the same spiritual consciousness that was in Socrates, that was in Plato, that was in Mendelssohn, that is currently in Edward Albert Meyer. So this spiritual consciousness was very, very mature. And so in this life, its personality was a musician. So it would get these impulses always to go in the right direction. So it wouldn't waste time. It would learn things at an incredible rate. So this is kind of what goes on. And the advantage that the new person has, they're taking advantage of what they've done in their previous lives. So it's so important to evolve the consciousness. And that's what the Meyer material says. What I've been talking about is the fourth, what I would call the fourth creational natural law of the universe, which is reincarnation. So, and one of the things that this does is it helps us to accept death a little more easily and understand the meaning behind things, because every plant and every animal also reincarnates. There's a wonderful passage in Billy's book called The Goblet of Truth that is entitled What the Truth Knows to Say. And I never remember it exactly, but it says something like, rivers, stones, plants, animals, bushes, trees, everything that crawls and flies on the earth is a life form with a spirit forms. And these spirit forms are on a journey through time, which involved many, many lifetimes. And that death is just the passage into rebirth, into the world of pure spirit. And many of these creatures are aware of each other, and they're connected by these psychic swinging waves. And the psychic swinging wave is a wave that comes from the spiritual consciousness that's connected somehow to the great universal power, and that can also be utilized by the material consciousness. And I believe it's the power that occurs when, for example, a woman can lift a car up to save her child. They always say, "Oh, it's just adrenaline." No, it's something much more important and powerful than that. It's the same thing that kind of works in telepathy between creatures. And we here on the earth have the beginning of telepathy. We don't have real telepathy yet. Billy did with the Playar, and he would get clear verbal information from Svath. But very few people, if any, on the earth really have telepathy. Now, you have the beginning of telepathy in your relationship with other people and with your relationship with pets, with other animals. They can sense your thoughts. They can sense your feelings. And that's the very, very beginning of this telepathy, which I think is related to the swinging wave, it's called in the German. And it's related to love. And that's one of the things, the first creational natural law in the universe. And there is it's called Love Teaching Letter 27. That's actually part of the spiritual teaching that only the people in Switzerland really get to, but they open this up for one reason or another. Then I've read this and contemplated this for I don't even know how many years now. And you get bits and pieces of it because it's so incredibly profound. It's more musical or beautiful than anything else to me. It has to be understood in the big picture. It has to be understood in relationship to pattern and gestalt thinking. It's possible to break it down to a degree, but it kind of resists that. Let me read the one sentence here that kind of stands out to me. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. So this love that I'm talking about is this thinking of creation. It's its highest idea. A principle is like an idea or a concept. Love is the highest concept of the universal consciousness. And through this concept, all of our universe exists. That means even dead planets and moons out there exist because of the love of creation. How much more our planet that's filled with life? And it says everything exists in absolute logic because of this love. Well, the term absolute here is quite interesting because absolute has a concept associated with it, meaning permanent or without question. I was looking at that today. Just take me a second here. I had the wrong notes up. It's interesting that this little concept, it kind of resists analysis in a way. Here we go. Absolute implies an unquestioned finality. That's the word I was looking for. So love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute, meaning unquestioned finality, logic. So there's the highest thoughts, the highest concept of the universal consciousness is love, but it's, and it creates the entire universe because of this concept of love. And everything that exists in our universe also exists because of absolute logic, unquestioned finality associated with this. And it's not a illogical universe at all. It's logic means a proper or reasonable way of thinking about something. It also means the science of formal principles of reasoning. So there's a very formal logic associated with the creation. And it goes on to say the love of creation is everywhere because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. So this love, it explains it later. It says, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. So there's this radiating concept, this radiating principle of love. When we get to a certain point, we start to intuit it through our thinking, through our observation. If you look up a beautiful starry sky at night, you can sense it. If you're in the forest and you see beautiful trees, you can sense this feeling, this fine sensitive feeling called love. It's not romantic, doesn't have anything to do with the love that we talk about today. And this love, this creational love is everywhere because without it, there wouldn't be anything. Nothing at all would exist. And it says here that the individual should therefore be aware that he exists only through the love of creation and that he carries this love within himself. Creation created everything in love and logic and put the same love in all of its creatures so that life itself is love. And somewhere in here it goes on to say something that every tiny plant and every tiny animal fulfills its purpose in love, and that love is the highest principle in all creation. And everything fulfills that principle through absolute logic. So, plants and animals, by default, fulfill their purpose in creation. Now, humans don't. Humans have to strive, and animals have to strive, plants have to strive, everything has to strive in creation. That's another creational natural law. But human beings can turn away from love, and they can turn away from their creational purpose. And unfortunately, because our whole society is going down a wrong path, and we have all this media and all these distractions, it becomes very, very difficult to focus on the evolution of your consciousness because there's so much entertainment. Let me read something here from one of Billy's books called The Way to Live. I'm going through it for the second time. Page 194 here. If the human being's developmental change is unobjectionable, then he/she leads a successful life in freedom. However, if his or her developmental change must be objected to, then he or she is unfree, stifled by a burden of regulations. And I think today there's a lot of impediments to your evolution. The music, the movies, the internet, there's a lot of things that will hold you back. Neither an individual human being nor an entire country can be made prosperous by words and language alone. We have to continually strive. That's the meaning of our life. That's the purpose. And the more you strive, it's creational natural law, the more you work, the more your thinking will be neutral positive, And the more happiness you'll have because of that. The truthfulness of being human in the real sense can be recognized when those who live around a real human being are satisfied and joyous, and others from afar are attracted by the humanity of that one. And that humanity relates right to the love that we're talking about. May the human being never let himself / herself be seduced by his or her desires to hastily bring plans to fruition. Because good things take time. Therefore, may the human being not pay attention to small advantage, which only dazzle him or her. Slow and steady wins the race. Because all desire for quick accomplishment contradicts all thoroughness. And whoever directs his or her attentiveness at small advantages obstructs all great tasks and the actual success of fulfillment. Yeah, Billy's writings are profound. They're very profound, and I think it does us a lot of good to go through these again and again and again in order to really ending of these. Let me continue here about love. It says, creation created everything in love and logic, and put the same love in all of its creatures, so that life itself is love. Even if in this world often it seems to consist of only conflict and drudgery, this fact does not change. Life has become primarily a heavy and tough battle because the people have turned away from creation and turned away and have lost the knowledge of its existence. In undiminished size, however, creation lets its love become apparent nonetheless through its creations. The person must be only willing to see and recognize this love, and he will begin to feel it. If he opens to the love of creation and he allows it to flow into himself, he becomes filled with respectful gratitude and great joy. And this is the section I was referring to earlier. Each smallest plant, each ever so tiny animal was created in love by creation. Each creation existing according to the same law of love. All life is in the absolute perfection, that which it should be through the love of creation. And except for humans, every life form lives exactly by this creation's plan. Only humans have turned away from love and must learn again what true love is. The infinite love of creation connects all life, because in all life this love lies hidden. Very profound stuff indeed. I like to go back to this from time to time. There's another related passage in Contact Report 10. Contact Report 10 is sometimes referred to as the spiritual teaching. And in verse 241 here it says, and within each human the infinite has its seat. However, very few are able to recognize this. And I think what it's referring to here is the spirit form. That's the infinite. Your spirit form really is infinite. It never dies. To wake up the infinite requires reasonable logic and being free from unreal teachings. There's the relationship to logic again. And one of the things that helps a great deal, and I'm so glad I just started again, meditating. Because one of the things you have to get back into touch with is your inner I, your innermost self. And that's why it requires us to turn off sometimes the consciousness, the the unimportant. Let's put it that way. Our consciousness bounces everywhere. Our material consciousness has a tendency to bounce back and forth all over the place between a lot of unmeaning things. And one of the reasons we gravitate to cell phones and to televisions and, you know, YouTube and things like that is because it will stop our consciousness from bouncing around, and we kind of go into a hypnotic state. But that's not so good, because then all we're doing is filling time and not evolving our consciousness. So we have a real big challenge here on the earth. According to Meyer Information, on Wednesday, March 22nd, or 26th, 1975, at 3:20 p.m., Billy had a contact with a lady named Shinyasi. And this is his 10th contact with her. She's supposed to have been 344 years old, about 5'5", tall, slender, a pretty woman, fair skin, sparkling blue eyes, light blonde hair. She suffered later in 1977 a life-threatening accident in the Semyase Silver Star Center in Hinterschmidruti, when one of the other people at the center walked in when Billy was talking to her. Now, the Plearen are incredibly sensitive to our thoughts, and they're at the fifth stage of evolution, the fourth and fifth, and we're down here at 2 and 3. So our thinking isn't really compatible anymore. So they will feel our thinking and be shocked by it because of our instability, because of our lack of balance, and because of our negative thinking. And it causes them great distress. And typically what will happen, if they come into contact with an Earth human, and they don't have any kind of electronic shielding, it will cause them to lose control of their bodies. And Semyase fell, and she hit her head. And she had to be taken back to Ira for medical treatment and rehabilitation. Eventually, she did come back and meet with Billy again. In 1984 was the last contact. Semyase had an after effect of her accident, and she suffered a cerebral collapse in November 1984 and had to be transported to the Tao universe. And she was healed with the help of another one of Billy's contacts named Asket and a people called the Sonar, so S-O-N-A-E-R, and they're ETs from the Tao universe. They're different. Let's say that. They do not require any ships to travel through space and time. So they're not more typical human like the Plearen or the Timmers or the people of Earth. So in any case, Semyase, it'll take her about 70 years to get back into a state of health. Now, this is one of the reasons why the Plearen don't have open direct contact with us anymore. It's extremely dangerous for them to be here because of their level of evolution and our lack of evolution. Now, one of the creational laws is that there is an obligation that these people have to kind of help less evolved peoples like ourselves. And we're in a very difficult situation here on the earth because of a genetic manipulation that was done to us as well. And all the people on the earth have a tendency, and it's part of our genetics now, to fight and for conflict. And this was done to us in ancient times because, it's a long story, there was a group in the Sirius system that they were genetic engineers, and they kind of genetically engineered out of themselves the ability to fight because they were descendants of the Lyrians, who also had a bit of an overactive sense of conflict. So they went too far, these Syrians did, and they created a human being to do their fighting for them who was would only have about 100-year lifespan. And they were very aggressive, and they were good at what they were designed to do, but to the point where they actually became a threat to the Syrians. So this group from the Cirrus system, and this was the Cirrus system in a different space-time configuration from ours, decided to wipe all of these people out that they had literally created through genetic engineering. And there were certain people from this civilization of Cirrus that were called the Benefactors. And the Benefactors, a group of them, brought people, the genetically engineered people, the genetically manipulated people, with a shortened lifespan and increased aggression. They brought them to our solar system. Now, at that time, which was hundreds of thousands of years ago, at least, Mars was inhabitable, and there was another planet in our solar system that was inhabitable called Melona. So there were three planets that had a certain amount of these genetically manipulated people. Most of them, I believe, went to Melona. Now, when they were on Melona, there was great conflict and warfare on Melona, and one of the things they did was they redirected an ocean into a volcano, which caused their planet to explode. And now, and I believe it's between Mars and Jupiter, we have an asteroid belt, which is the remnant of the destroyed planet Melona. Now, before Melona was completely destroyed, some of those people got off and came to the Earth, and they passed their genetics through normal reproduction, was passed all over the Earth. And you can see that over time, you know, we originally had the 1,000-year lifespans. And then over time, we lived less and less time. Now, eventually, the Meyer material says that our scientists will detect this genetic defect, this intentional genetic change that was made to us. And then we probably already have the technology to switch that aging gene off. Now we have to decide, do we want to do that now with 9 billion people on the planet? And that's one of the big issues. And maybe that'll be, maybe we can talk about that a little bit tonight, population and why the Meyer material says that we are overpopulated. Now, in Contact Report 11, it talks about something else. It talks about, you know, the material intellect. And I've talked about that tonight, the material intellect. It says, in Contact Report 11, verse 77, it says, in the non-creational thinking human being, the material intellect, with all its given limitations, takes the highest place and thereby has a consequence, a tremendously slow development of the spirit. So because we have so much emphasis on the material intellect, we have a very slow development of the spirit and its consciousness. In verse 83, it says, the material intellect accepts the testimony of the material senses and their resulting conclusions, but rejects the deepest subjective intuitions. So our inner self, our spiritual consciousness, gives us intuitions that we should be paying attention to. Let me continue here with what it says here. I think this is very important. Therefore, in order to avoid the downfall of humanity in the third millennium, it is necessary to find the way back to creational laws and recommendations in the creational truth. And remember, I was talking about the creational laws, the law of love, the law of neutral positive thinking, that's balanced thinking, the law of striving, and the law of reincarnation. Now, striving is the work. We should always be focused on our work. And it's a hard thing to do. It takes a lot of discipline. However, this can only happen if the human beings of Earth once again follow the roots of creational truth and creational recommendations. Now, the Meyer material has some very controversial concepts, and I sometimes talk about them and sometimes I don't. There is a book that I would like to get one of these days. I don't think it's completely translated. Maybe it is. It's called God Delusion and God Delusion Insanity. And let me read a little section. And this is written by Marion Ullinger of Switzerland back in 2009. And she said, of the 7.5 billion human beings, which at this point constitute the Earth population, 4/5 profess a belief in one of the 6 world religions or of sects which have emerged from them. They believe in a God whose name may not be named. They believe in a creator God in Jesus Christ, in diverse saints, in Allah, Shiva, Brahma, or whatever they are called, in nature gods, tin gods, and so forth. They are mostly also firmly convinced that they believe in the legitimate creator of our universe and the one who determines their fate. They pray and beg for favor, health, objects, or material wealth, hang rosaries over the rearview mirror of the car. Now, let me stop a minute there. And this will help you. And I think this is part of the problem with most of our religions, is it puts people in a situation where they're begging. They're begging for favor. They're begging for health. They're begging for material wealth. What is beneficial, at least in my opinion, about the Meyer material is it takes you out of that begging and submissive mindset. And you start to have confidence in yourself. And you start to learn that there are certain laws of nature. And that if you live within these laws, it's most likely that things are going to go well for you. Now, one of these laws is about our thinking. And we've talked about this before. There is a book. It's called The Might of Thoughts book. It's an incredibly important book. And what it says is this principle, that the universe thinks in a neutral, positive way. And that when we think in a neutral, positive way, our lives tend to be successful. In other words, neutral, positive, good thoughts lead to good feelings. The feelings always come from the thoughts, most always. Feelings, good feelings, neutral, positive feelings, lead to good habits. Okay? Good habits lead to good circumstances in your life. So you start with good thinking, and you lead to good circumstances in your life. Nowhere in there involves begging. Nowhere in there involves this pleading. What it involves is self-responsibility and hard work. Now, imbalance is a lack of proportion between things. What we're trying to do is get a balance to our thinking, a neutral, positive balance to our thinking. It's just like water. Have you noticed that water always seeks a balance? All of nature works to achieve a balance. If you're putting rosaries in the mirror of your car and crosses around your neck to think that you're going to have immunity from accidents and everything bad, you're weakening yourself. What you need to do is have confidence in your own ability. Your thoughts are incredibly powerful. People sacrifice food, plants, money, animals, and sometimes human beings They, in the past, we would sacrifice children and virgins in order to make a god or a goddess be merciful, to win over the goddess, a god or goddess. They would give their long dark hair to the temple. They would exchange, they would give millions of dollars to churches. They would throw small children from a high tower into the depths. Anyway, this article goes on and on with all, what all people have done. And it says basically that these are acts of dim-wittedness and brainlessness, which is quite a shame. You don't have to do this. You don't have to behave this way. The universal consciousness doesn't require you to give money to a church. It doesn't require you to sacrifice your children. It doesn't require you to beg. There are just certain principles that the universe runs by. And if you follow these natural laws, your life will go much, much better. According to Meyer information, the concept of God, which is very different from the concept of universal consciousness, God, the idea of God, has been genetically inherited over millions of years. And the Meyer people say it's a form of schizophrenic epileptic delusion and is so established in the brain's temporal and parietal lobes. Children are given this concept at a very young age. So, and this is part of what's called the God delusion insanity. There's a universal intelligence, but that is very, very different from the idea of a Heavenly Father that's taking away your responsibility that you have to beg to. In any case, this is a very interesting book. Something that I'd like to study in more detail later. But the whole idea of learning to control your thoughts is very, very critical in terms of being happy. If you look at a tree, if you look at nature, it'll tell you a lot about balance. A tree has roots in the ground, and it has a crown, branches that go outward that we see from the top. For the tree to be strong, there has to be a balance between the roots that have grown and the crown that grows above the ground. That gives the tree its stability. Without a balance between those two, the tree tends to fall down in a strong wind. It's the same way with your thinking. Your thinking needs to be neutral, positive. Elizabeth Mooseberger, book, The Mind of Thought, she said this about it. So the book which lies before you is dedicated to humankind that is ill in its consciousness, so that it finds again the creational natural way which it lost long ago. We are kind of ill in our consciousness here on the earth. We need to learn again independent thinking. When you learn independent thinking, you become the architect of your own fortune. You make your own luck. An evolution of the consciousness only comes about through independent thinking. Now, the problem is, and it's a very difficult thing to get away from, our thinking is more and more stunted on this planet because we live in a consumer society in which everything is pre-chewed to an excessive degree by television, radio, newspapers. Boy, I've never seen it to this extreme. This election really showed me how prevalent mind control is in our country. And none of us, I guess, are completely impervious to it. Particularly when Hillary did not win the presidency, some of her followers would just cry hysterically. And they would film themselves on YouTube crying hysterically. These are people that have great internal cognitive dissonance. I don't think they got into that state through independent thinking. They got into that state because they let the media do their thinking for them. And now it's kind of a form of mind control. You know, a lot of our stars today have been MK Ultra mind control victims. Many of them. There's a lady that came out and wrote a book, Kathy O'Brien, about the mind control that goes on. What they do in mind control, and allegedly the CIA and I think the Nazis under Dr. Mengele were involved in this too. And our three-letter agencies, a few of them do this to this day. The global elite are involved in this, particularly with their own children. Is that they through torture, they cause people's consciousness to kind of split. So your conscious mind kind of shuts off because of the incredible pain they're being put under. That causes alternate personalities to be created. And they can actually use trigger words to bring up alternate personalities. And Diane Sawyer was interviewing Britney Spears, and she said the word spasm, which must have been one of Britney's trigger words. And it triggered her into a completely different personality that was very childlike. So that just brings up just an example of the excessive degree of mind control. And that's extreme mind control. The mind control that comes through television, radio, newspapers, magazines, and books isn't quite that extreme. But it seems to affect a lot some people almost that badly. And you can see the people that just cry and lose control of themselves. Billy, I talked quickly earlier about his contacts with Sfoth, but he also had contacts with a woman named Askit from the Tao universe. And Askit, in one of her contact sessions with Billy, and it's written in Askit's Explanations Part 5, she says, the human is still not capable of coping with and fully understanding the truth. Isn't that the truth? Isn't there the movie says where Jack Nicholson says, you can't handle the truth? Well, I think that's very true. Just an example of Hillary's followers that can't handle the truth of her not winning the presidency, which they should be celebrating because we'd probably be in a nuclear war right now. But no, instead they're crying. This is cognitive dissonance. Let me continue here. Askit says, the human is still not capable of coping with and fully understanding the truth. And he is not yet mature enough to know his future and to approach it correctly. For that reason, the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him as in equations in order to make him think independently, whereby he slowly finds and recognizes the truth for himself. And that's one of the reasons why we have so many prophecies in the Meyer material. We are the creators of our own morality, of our own character, of our own personality. We also create the state of our own psyche. We are the creator of our entire life circumstances, our environment, and our destiny. Now, we're not taught this way. Our religions surely don't teach us this way. Our religions tell us we're sheep, and we have to depend on a pastor. We have to depend on angels and saints. And the Meyer material says, you have to learn to think independently, and you're the architect of your own life. We have something called our psyche, which controls our thoughts and feelings associated with our material consciousness. And the power of that material consciousness, we don't really understand yet in our society. Believe me, if we understood the power of our own thinking, it would go away. We would be very independent. So, on page 20 of The Might of Thoughts, it says, the human being must make the effort to clarify his or her thoughts, which then become more valuable, more purposive, and productive, and form life in a more harmonious, equalized way. So if you clarify your thoughts, it can make your life more harmonious and balanced. Everything needs patience and practice, as well as a continued effort, because only therefore can the door to real knowledge be found and open. So we need to clarify our thoughts. We need to put forth effort. We need to practice. Clarifying means to make a statement or a situation less confused and more clearly comprehensible. And the word confusion means a lack of understanding, uncertainty. It has the connotation of things being mingled together. So confusion confuses the boundary between things, and the distinctions between things are lost. And the clarification of our thoughts puts the boundaries back in between things, so we can distinguish one category of something from another category. And for me, the clarification of my thoughts come when I go back over things over and over again, like this writing, this Love Letter 27, which I've gone over again and again and again many times. For example, that one saying again, love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. The individual then should therefore be aware that he himself exists only through the love of creation. So when you clarify thoughts like that, when you repeat thoughts like that, they generate in you good feelings. And good feelings lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good circumstances. So your consciousness is like a garden. And if you correctly maintain it, you'll have good and positive thoughts in your consciousness. You'll avoid negative repeating thoughts. Now, people today are very psychically disturbed because they have negative repeating thoughts. And it's because their perceptive ability becomes very limited, very narrowed. And their thoughts, they lose freedom of thought. They don't want to think about these negative thoughts anymore, but they continue to think because it's like an obsession. The thoughts are forced into a cycle with which the same thoughts and themes of thoughts, they appear over and over again. And a rotation of thoughts comes forth. And this rotation of thoughts begins to operate in the person who has kind of lost control of his thinking. It's a real common thing, happens to a lot of people. It's happened to me before. And if we continue in that state, we can really become delusional. You see people start acting irrational, and it's because these negative thoughts have circulated over and over again. And the border in their own behavior between normality and delusion gets blurred. So you can see people fall prey to insanity, psychological disorders, And people become knocked around by the circumstances of their life. But you're actually the Lord and Master of your entire life, of your entire self. And if you practice self-cognition and self-examination and the appropriate self-control, you'll learn that. That which the human being thinks, he makes real. Good and positive thoughts must be tended and nurtured. The human being should have a good, positive opinion of himself. You need to be fulfilling your duty to yourself. That's one of the most important things you can do, is be your own friend. You don't need to attack yourself, and you need to continue to stay in a neutral, positive state as much as possible. In any case, I want to thank the folks that will listen to this show and archive. I've tried to been real consistent about doing shows and even getting some guests so you can hear some differing viewpoints. And I forgot, I wanted to talk a little bit today about what the Meyer material says about reptilians, because I know the guests on that are firm believers in reptilians, and not so much for Billy and Pata in that area. So maybe I'll get to that next year. Anyway, have a great New Year's, and we'll talk to you later. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. You've been listening to Ohio Exopolitics. Google Ohio Exopolitics and take a look at the website. We'll talk to you later. Good night.